Okay. Where to start? Let's start with a very, very sad, but cryptic section. Okay? And let's frame it properly. Yaakov finally arrives at Beit El. He tarries in his return. It should have been there earlier. We'll maybe talk about this in a different Rashi. Hashem has to instruct him. Kum alei Beit El. He arrives in Beit El. He purges whatever pagan components they had adopted, the clothing and the monies that they may have taken. So he wants to the idols that they may have taken. And he's all ready for the bracha, because he's arrived back home. He's ready for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to appear to him to create closure for the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. And of course, the name change is on the horizon. This time Hashem will appear to him and convert his name, transform his name from Yaakov to Yisrael. But there's an intervening section about Devorah's death. Now this Devorah is, of course, not Devorah HaNeviah. This is Devorah, who is Rivka's handmaid, or Rivka's assistant, Menekes. She assisted her in the domestic chores. She assisted as a wet nurse. She assisted Rivka in, you know, probably in raising Yaakov and Esav. So she dies, and she's buried Tachas Beis El, Tachas Ha'alon, Vayikrishma Alon Bachos. A lot happening here. I'll see. I mean, maybe we won't spend time on this Rashi. May run out of time. So first of all, she's buried Tachas Ha'alon. You and I would say, what's an alon? You're in the alon shvut. It's a tree. Rashi says, no, alon is not a tree. Alon in Sefer Bereishis is a plain, is another word for a meadow. Alon ne more, alon ne mamre, alon more. So she's buried not under a tree, but she's buried in a regular open field called alon bachus, because people cried when she died. Okay? Now, why would you not, first of all, just practically, why would you not bury someone under a tree? Seems like a very nice place to bury someone. It's shady, it's quiet. The answer is, why would you not bury someone under a tree?
Trees can absorb whatever that's going to help decompose the body.
So it'll help decompose the body, and more directly, the roots will ruin the body, will ruin the flat earth, will ruin the grave. So the tree is the last place you want to bury someone. So if you don't read Rashi carefully, you don't realize she wasn't buried under a tree. She was buried in a meadow. Now, the reason you get confused is because in a few psukim earlier, when they gather all the idols that they had absorbed from the locals, he buries them tachas ha'ilah. He buries them under a tree. Now, idols is something you'd want to bury under a tree because they're less accessible. You'd want the roots to help the decomposition of the whatever, the minerals. So the idols are buried under a tree, the idols and the Avodah Zarah articles, because you don't want them to be accessed under a tree. You're probably not going to dig it up. You don't want to disturb the tree. So he buries the idols underneath the Elah, but he buries Rivka underneath the Elon, underneath in a meadow. So just in terms of understanding where she's buried. So the question is, well, if she's buried in a meadow, why list a confusing word that will fool everyone who doesn't read Rashi? Why doesn't Torah just say she's buried in the Sada, or she's buried in the Bika? Why is she buried in the Alon, and it's called Alon Bachos, even though it's not really a tree? So Rashi says something very interesting. The word Alon means the other in Greek. Very appropriate Rashi for Hanukkah. In ancient Greek, the word Alon would be the other, Acher. Okay, so now we have two new questions. We now know why the Torah uses the word Alon, because it means the other, but what's the other? And why use a Greek word? Why don't you just say Acher? So Rashi's answer to this mystery creates even bigger questions. Why does the Torah introduce a foreign word? And any time the Torah uses a foreign word, we have to ask, what's the message? Why does the Torah all of a sudden disrupt its Hebrew flow and introduce a foreign word? The Torah can use foreign words. The Torah is international, but why here? And second of all, what does Acher refer to? Okay, so the story goes as follows, that Rivka wanted to call Yaakov back to Hebron, which is where she was living, in that general Hebron area, call him back from Aram. It's not sure whether she wanted him to come back from Aram, or she heard he got back to Israel, and he was tarrying and not delaying coming back to the home base down south in the Hebron area. She can't leave, so she sends her assistant, Devorah, her wet nurse, to call Yaakov home, to escort Yaakov home, to hurry him home. Devorah dies on the way, and somehow Yaakov, this is a story Rashi recites, and somehow Yaakov and his party are responsible for burying Devorah. At that point, when Devorah dies, Rivka dies. So there's a double mourning. That's why it's alon bachus. There's a lot of crying going on. They're not just crying for Devora, they're crying for Rivka. Okay? Now, Devora is buried in Beit El. That's where Yaakov is right now, in Beit El. But that's way up north. Okay? Where do people get buried of importance in Sefer Bereishis? Marissa Machpelah. But she's not one of the Imos. She's buried, but not as part of this Marissa Machpelah centrality. So she's buried in the other place. The other. Acher. It's not the Marissa Machpelah location. And it's foreign. It's not the Jewish burial site, or it's not the burial site that will be sanctified for Jewish history. So it's a foreign, I mean, it's not foreign in terms of international, but it's not in Marissa Machpelah. Remember, there's a lot happening here. Let's let it all unfold. So Devorah's, Rivka's assistant, she's dispatched to draw Yaakov home. She dies on the way. She's buried in the other location, described by a foreign word. And actually, if you look at the Pasuk, Rashi doesn't mention this, it doesn't say they buried her. It says, Vatikaver, she gets buried. Almost as if some animal buried her. Not in a disrespectful way, but this isn't part of the Marissa Machpelah process of burying our emos and emos. Okay, so now we solved. Why? Not to solve here. Every time you introduce, you peel away a new layer, there's new questions. So now we solved why the Torah describes her death and her burial under a tree, which really isn't a tree. It could confuse us unless you know Rashi, but it's a Greek word for the other. Why use a Greek word and why use the word other? Okay, so now we solved, and why was she on the road? Like, why is Devorah's death important? Because she's part of this drama of drawing Yaakov back home. Okay, but now there's a bigger question. Why doesn't the Torah tell us about Rivka's death? And so this is a coded way to describe Rivka's death. Just come out and say it. Rivka died. She's buried. Why do you have to insinuate Rivka's death by describing the death of her assistant who gets buried in a foreign place where Yaakov is, rather than Rivka's death? So Rashi addresses this also, that no one really wanted to talk about Rivka's death. It was kept on the DL, on the down low. It was very, very silent and discreet about it, very incognito. Why? And since everyone's incognito, the Torah pitches in and does its job. That's when we reveal the sources. Suppresses information about Rivka's death. Why is the Torah quiet about Rivka's death? The answer is because if people found out when Rivka died, Esav was such a notorious person that they would have trivialized Rivka. They would have made fun of her. So, oh, this is the day that the mother of Esav died. So no one really wants to talk about Rivka's death. Since no one wants to talk about Rivka's death, so the Torah is quiet about Rivka's death. Rivka dies incognito, if only referred to by Devorah's death. So that's a fascinating point. It's a fascinating point that Rivka is being associated with Esav. They're enemies. They're counterparts, right? Rivka manipulates around Esav. But it just highlights a very interesting question. When Yaakov leaves, basically Rivka and Esav have to spend their whole life together. Yitzchak's an invalid. Yitzchak can't see. Yitzchak can't direct the affairs of the house. So Rivka still has to be Esav's mother, despite the fact that she dislikes him. And despite the fact, well, we never really know if Esav discovers that Rivka had a hand in the whole process. Esav knows that Yaakov was manipulative in his mind, but we don't know if Esav ever uncovered that it's his mother. So from Esav's standpoint, Rivka's still his mom. And from Rivka's standpoint, Esav is still her son. And people still associate Esav and Rivka because they lived together for at least 20 years. And we're watching the events in Lavan's house. They're having dinner tonight. They're having dinner together every night watching the news or sowing the field. And it teaches us that you're always a mother and you're always a father. No matter what happens, you can disagree with the child can pick a different, but you always have that role and you always play that mother. And it also highlights the fact, and this is why what's Devorah's role? She's the wet nurse. Why do we not hear as much about her? Because unlike Sarah and Rachel and Leah, Rivka was the only mother. Sarah's assistant becomes a co-mother. Who's Sarah's assistant? Hagar. Leah and Rachel's assistants respectively become co-mothers, Zilpah and Bilhah. But Rivka's the only mother. She doesn't need an assistant. But because she doesn't need an assistant, she has to bear both the tzaddik and the rasha. Sarah has a bit of a luxury. She can be the mother of the tzaddik. So no one's going to curse the day that Sarah's born because that's the day Yishmael she didn't give birth to Yishma. She can pass that off to Hagar. But Rivka has to be the mother of both the Tzaddik and the Rasha. Because, and therefore, to highlight that, she doesn't really have a co-mother. She just has a nurse, Devara. And because of that, and that's the tragedy, that Rivka basically is more associated with Esav than she is with Yaakov. And she's trying to get Yaakov to come home by sending Devara to call Yaakov. And she never reunites with Yaakov, which is a sad experience. She never reunites with Yaakov. So there's a lot happening in this Rashi. I'll share with you a little bit later some of the things we discovered in this Rashi. But it's not over. Okay? It's not over. Okay? Remember, Yaakov has finally arrived in Beit El to rendezvous with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Devorah is trying to pull him home. And Hashem appears to him after Rivka dies, because this is a transition point. Rivka has now died, and now Hashem can appear to him and change his name to Yisrael. Because this is a passage, this is a transition. The death of a mother or a father in Sefer Bereishis is a transition. But Yaakov is still playing out of position. This whole story is about Yaakov being out of position. It starts with him not yet being in Beit El, and Hashem saying, you have to be in Beit El, stop tarrying, stop delaying. In fact, an earlier Rashi says that his punishment for his delay was the whole Dina episode. Had he just arrived in Beit El quickly and expeditiously, the whole rape of Dina wouldn't have occurred. Whether it's a punishment, whether it's just a result of not really knowing where you belong, and therefore your daughter has a split identity, and it's not clear that I'm a Jew and I believe I belong in Beit El and I shouldn't be hanging around the bars of Shechem or walking around Shechem, you know, late at night. So Yaakov has to get to Beit El, and Rivka's death highlights the fact that he hasn't gone home quickly enough. Just imagine, had he arrived in Beit El earlier than he did, the rape of Dina wouldn't have occurred, the war with Shechem wouldn't have erupted, and it's not just that he would have been in Beit El, he could have arrived in Hebron, down south, which is where Jews should be, in Sefer Bereishis, in the Hebron Yerushalayim area, not up north in Beit El. Beit El is the exit point. Beit El is the customs office. When you leave to go north, you stop in Beit El, and you have an apparition with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you dive and you put a matzefa, right? What's the parallel in the south? We'll see this in Parshas Vayigash. What's the customs office in the south? Exit point? Be'er Sheva. That's where Yaakov travels on his way to Mitzrayim. So when you travel to meet the family up north, your last stop, last exit before the birds is Beit El. When you travel down south to meet your enemies, the last exit point is Be'er Sheva. But you shouldn't be hanging out there. You should be basically in the Hebron Yerushalayim area. And so the burial of Rivka, which is suppressed and described by the burial of Devorah, highlights, A, the tragedy of Rivka, that she never reunites with Yaakov, but also Yaakov's role in this tragedy. He doesn't get back fast enough to Beit El, and then ultimately doesn't return to Hebron, where he should be. And that's highlighted by the next parasha. What happened in the very next parasha? After we bury Devorah and we bury Rivka incognito, who dies? Rachel. And Yaakov's out of position. Because where should Yaakov be when Rachel dies? In Hebron. And if she dies in Hebron, then she gets buried in Hebron. Right? Parshas Vayeshev. Yaakov finally gets to Hebron. That's where he dispatches Yosef from. That's where he should be living. Hebron, or our area generally, this area. But instead, he gets caught, like Zuru said with his pants in. He gets caught unprepared. And she dies on the road. And she's buried on the road. So you have to read the burial of Rachel in context of where Yaakov is, Devorah's death, what it connotes, what Rivka's role was in the whole. You have to read the entire mega section in an organic fashion, not just to highlight, oh, Devorah died. Who cares? We don't care about Devorah, but she's not a principal player. This is not Devorah Hanaviyah. This is just some woman named Devorah. Interesting, she has a Jewish name, but where she came from, probably part of the entourage. Interestingly enough, this also is the reason that many archaeologists believe that Kever Rachel is not really Kever Rachel. Because where's Beit El? In the north or the south? In the north. Yaakov's traveling to Hebron. So he's in the north. He's probably somewhere in the north near Beit El rather than on the roadside. So there's a lot happening here in this one little Rashi about burying a woman named Devorah and describing her death as in a way that could be confusing. We talked about the fact that she's buried under a tree, but it's really not a tree. It's a plane. You won't bury someone under a tree, as the roots would ruin the gravesite. And it's described as a word that in Greek means the other burial, because it's not Maris HaMachpelah. Why do you use a Greek word to describe the burial? Because it's not Maris HaMachpelah. It's a foreign place, not part of the place where the Imams were buried. Okay, so one little Rashi. We're out of time. There's a lot happening in this Rashi. Okay? Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You're welcome. Thank you.
Here are the two different ways.